Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
It is February 20th, 2012. There was something I was looking for. I couldn't find it. Anyway, plenty of news going on today. You know, we have got no choice but to break down that God but awful, Whitney Houston funeral. And not for the context. We will not be going after it for its context. Because what happened during that funeral, that was all great. See, there is one family I have more respect for than any other family right now, with the exception of the Houston family who has to deal with so much. But the people that I have the most respect for right now is the Winans family. And we know there's a million of them. If anybody remembers that rap group, A Tribe Called Quest, Fife Dog, the sidekick to Q-Tip, has that famous line, got more rhymes than the Winans got family. Their family is everywhere. The Winans, I saw, I didn't even know that there was a pastor or reverend. I knew that they were in the church, but I didn't know. This guy was great. He gave the best eulogy. It's Marvin Winans. Gave the best eulogy. Gave the great closing speech. He was amazing. And I have to give credit to BB and CC Winans, who I've always liked, even though I don't follow gospel music all that much, but I've always liked them as people. And I even said that about Whitney Houston. Didn't like her music, but she was a voice, because I can respect her voice. I don't have to follow her to respect her voice. I don't have to like anything that she sings to know that she has a good voice. I know a good voice. It's like I said about Adele. Can't stand a song, maybe one, that she did live. Cold Shoulder. I love that song. We play it here. But I'm not into her music. I can give two dams about her music. But she's a damn good voice, and I respect it. I'm not just going to hate her because I don't like the music. Never have been, never will be that type of hater. That's reckless. But the people out there who are considered iconic singers, what the hell were they doing out there? Yes, Stevie Wonder, I know you're blind, but you're supposed to be able to sing. You had a week to practice there, Stevie. You came up short. And we'll play that garbage-ass song you claim God help you wrote. We'll play that garbage piece of junk song that you could... I mean, what Elton John persona came over you to change the ribbon in the sky words for something for Whitney? You couldn't write her a song in a week. Your song's in the key of life. Remember Songs in the Key of Life? You're supposed to be one of the most prolific songwriters there is. And you just rewrite a 30-year-old song that's written in the sky for all love? That's all you could do? If it was Whitney's favorite song, just sing the damn song. It doesn't matter whether or not it's inappropriate. There's a ribbon in the sky for our love. Come on, for crying out loud, when they when they dragged, when they picked up her body and the parishioners followed her casket out, they played "I Will Always Love You." That's a love song. You couldn't play "A Ribbon in Our Sky" because it was Whitney's song. That's Whitney's favorite song. Sing it. You don't have to change the words, but we'll get into that. And oh my goodness, how did you not get dropped from your record label, Miss Alicia Keys? Has the whack juice of Swizz Beatz finally taken its effect on you? Has the whackness of your husband, Swizz Beatz, finally rubbed off on you? That you would get out on stage, beyond a piano, behind a pew, and sing the horrible rendition of "Angel" that you did last night, or last week, or what was it, Saturday, whatever. Why would you do that? Listen to this garbage. If I was Simon Cowell, it would go a little something like this. Alicia, that was just god awful. No, pack your piano and leave the New Hope Baptist Church forever. In fact, you're not allowed in the state of New Jersey ever again. You were god awful. Clive Davis, please walk over and put this girl out to pasture. Don't ever sign another record deal for this girl. Where's Swizz Beatz? I'd like to see him, and I'd like to smack him in the face as well. What was this garbage? God was offended. God was offended by that singing. I know he was. He's a just God. I know he just hated that. That's much I know. He just hated that. He is a just God. And he just hated that. He hated that rendition. Please, Alicia, do not sing about my angels ever again. Okay? Whitney is up here, and she is absolutely, she's angered. She's angered right now. Because Whitney's an angel! What the heck happened to you? That was awful. And let's get into Stevie. We got to get into Stevie Wonder's. But please, let's get into Stevie's horrible performance. This was just awful.
Ninth day in 1963, we were blessed so incredibly with a sound so incredibly with these voices.
Doesn't even rhyme.
Voice of my choir of heaven from love. He allowed you to touch our heart, and you did from the very start. And that gift no
press or media or nobody can tear apart. It's a gift from heaven's fire of love.
Now, Stevie Wonder had the nerve to say that he asked God to help him write lyrics for Whitney's eulogy, whatever it was he was doing. He asked for God's help, and God sent these words down to him. There's one thing that I know, that there is a just God. And God just didn't write those songs. Didn't write those lyrics. He did not. God wants no part of those lyrics. If God was on Twitter, he would have said emphatically, I've got nothing to do with what Stevie's doing down there. He is bearing false witness. That's what Stevie was doing out there. He was awful. I'm angered by it. But you know what? He's Stevie. We'll give him a pass. Now, everybody on the news is talking about their favorite moments. All of their favorite moments from the funeral. Or Whitney's homegoing. What strikes me as odd in all of this homegoing garbage is that not once did they even bother to mention the most important or the most relevant out of all of it. This man got played. He got played. And I have more respect for him than I ever will anybody who showed up there. Or who didn't, Aretha Franklin. All of those who didn't show up there. And that is B.B. Winans. Who got up there and he said, I mean, B.B. made me smile when he talked about Whitney. He made me smile. Because he talked about Whitney in the way that we did when we did our celebrity roast of Whitney Houston. When we talked about Whitney and her wild antics and the way that she was. Not all that crap that everybody else is talking about. And the beautiful songs and the beautiful lyrics and the Kevin Costner. She was the only person for the movie Bodyguard. I got a breakdown, by the way, of that one. Kevin Costner and his BS. About how Whitney was the only person for that role. Turns out Diana Ross was also for that role. Turns out Dolly Parton was also for that role. Turns out that 67 times the Bodyguard movie got turned down by Hollywood. That Olivia Newton-John was also supposed to take that role of Rachel Marin. That's right. 67 times it was turned down. I hate it when they lie. But the guy who got no props, nobody's talking about this man's eulogy when he was supposed to get up there and sing, but he told that great story about Whitney Houston, Mr. B.B. Wine.
We talk about her voice and we talk about her talent, which was a beautiful thing. But what I'm going to miss is crazy Whitney. I had a chance to sit back a little bit and start remembering, and so last night we were here and I said, Cece, if anything I want to share and what I'm going to miss is that Whitney, when we were getting ready to do our first major headline tour, and Whitney told us we had to come over, so we came over to the house and she said, okay, we were sitting in her closet, and I heard her closet was about big as this church, so we wasn't crowded. So we're sitting there, and she said, okay, so, all right, so I got to tell y'all what we going to do. We going to, I went and I had some uniforms made. We looked at it, so what? She said, I got the background dresses for the girls, for the three girls, and the cream. And I got the band, and I got the cream for the shirts, and BB, I got you a suit. I got a cream suit made, and Cece, I got you a melon, a melon dress made, and I got me a green one. She made her a green one. She said, cause we gon' headline, and she was determined, and I know Clive is here. She made Clive so mad. Well, she decided, and the height of her career, she was going to come sing background with BB and CeCe. And so we sat down, we said, Whitney, you can't do that. Nobody told you to do that. Girl, this is not a material relationship. She said, okay. Well, look, let me just say this. She said, you my brother and sister, right? We said, yeah, we your brother. And I'm your sister, right? And we said, yes, you are sister. She said, okay, and we love each other, right? So Whitney, yeah, we love each other. She said, and this is what I'm gonna miss. She said, and y'all broke, right? She said, I'm rich, right? So I can buy what I want to for y'all, right? But that is the Whitney.
That for me was the most touching moment there was. It was honest. He said it. He said, what I'm going to miss is crazy Whitney. And, you know, with all of the things that you've heard about Whitney Houston, about her erratic behavior and how crazy she was and the stuff that she did, BB tapped into that humanity, that human part of her. That Whitney was a real person. Everybody was talking about her talent. We all know that. That's the reason why she was a star, was because she was a star. We get it. But BB did the most telling story of her, and people in the media avoided it. That's why it was the realest for me. And all this hollering and screaming by Alicia Keys. That's just awful. Who's your singing coach, Swizz Beatz? Goodness gracious. Get back in the studio. Get back to class, Alicia Keys. You are garbage. If you sell another record, I'll be stunned. Let's get to the guys, of course, on this. Now, y'all know that I am exactly right on this one. That was awful.
Nothing other income. It's nothing on this.
Okay, whoever that is, I don't know who that is.
I probably wasn't putting on that one either.
I'm putting that person on hold. Is that JC? JC's on hold. Sorry. So, James, come on. You didn't watch any of this garbage, but come on. What? That was a great story by BB, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
How telling.
Yes, it was. And I do tend to agree with you on the fact that it was, as far as I'm hearing right now, yeah, it was a real, for instance, for lack of a better term, that he was relating to the crowd. But everybody's going to pick it apart.
But no one even covered it. It's not, when everyone is talking about this funeral, everyone who has been on the news today talking about this funeral, and they're mentioning, they go, let's show some highlights from the funeral. Not one person played BB singing or even that little monologue he gave. Not one place played it. And it was the best part of everything. And is it because BB's not well known in the national media? It still doesn't matter. These people were sharing a story about her, and it's a relevant story. It's about her. It's not about whether or not BB's popular. That's a great story. I don't need, what's his name, Stevie Blunder, up there singing some rehashed version of A Ribbon in the Sky. And I damn sure don't want to hear Alicia Keys destroy such a good song like, Angel. I don't need her ripping that off. You heard her singing. She might as well have Swizz Beatz and Jay-Z singing background. That was awful.
Okay. Now, what I'm about to say, you're not going to like, obviously. But, again, this happens at any funeral. Whether it's a person that we all think we know, or if it's just our mom and pop or a family member or even a close friend. First, a funeral is not for the deceased.
Right. You're absolutely right. I agree. It's for the mourning.
Right. It's our time to say at least what they meant to us, and especially when it comes to a star, especially a star of her caliber, yeah, you're going to have people coming out of the woodwork. Because everyone wants to have their say.
Okay.
And I do think that, you know, it's telling, and it's a little, it's almost like the person that you're talking about takes a back seat because now I got my spotlight.
Right. And I agree with you there. I saw a lot of people taking this opportunity to put themselves in the spotlight. It's funny you should mention that, James. Let me find this, and I'm certain it's here somewhere. Let me see if I can find this, because I'm certain that I put this here. Let me find his audio. Yeah, here we go. Here is an opportunity to sell a movie. If you didn't hear this, here's Tyler
God
Perry.
Bless you. The Houston family, I know this. I know this grief. It was Pat who introduced me to Whitney a while back, and she and I sat in a restaurant in Atlanta, just the two of us. Sat there talking for about an hour and a half, about 4 years ago. And during this time, she was telling me about her life, and I was very surprised at how candid and open and revealing she was as she was talking to me. And she would talk about some things that she had went through, some things that made her sad, some things that were tough. And as I would see her talk about this, I would see this heaviness come upon her. And I'm the type of person that when I would see this with anyone, I would just want to say something encouraging. But before I could get words out to encourage her, she would say, "But the Lord."
Yes.
And the conversation went on. The conversation went on. We would talk a little bit more. She'd go back into the sadness. And just when I'm about to step in, she would say, "But my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and his amazing grace." It was at that moment that I knew that I would do all I can to stand with her. And from that moment to now, I've been standing with the family and her, and I'm just completely thankful to God for all that he has done in her life. There are two constants that I know about Whitney Houston, and one is that there was a grace that carried. A grace that carried her from heaven down through Mississippi Houston. A grace that brought her up through singing, a grace that brought, from what I understand, she wasn't even supposed to be able to speak, let alone sing, because of an incident that happened to her as a child, but there was a grace that kept on carrying her all the way through. The same grace led her all the way to the top of the charts, sold all of these albums, and just done some amazing things, won all these awards. She's sang for presidents, and there was a grace that kept on carrying her. That's one thing I know, and the other thing I know, for sure, and this is more important than anything that she's ever done in her life, Whitney Houston loved the Lord. And in every conversation we had over these years, it was evident that she loved the Lord. She loved the Lord. And when I think about it, there's a scripture that keeps burning in my heart. I keep thinking about the Apostle Paul in Romans when he was talking about, "I am persuaded that nothing shall separate me from the love of God." So what I know about it is that nothing separated her from the love of God. And if you look at what Paul was saying, he was describing her life so perfectly. He said, neither height, which meant no matter how far she went in the stratosphere, nothing separated her from the love.
Come on, Nico.
Neither height nor depth, no matter how much struggle, no matter what she had to go through, no matter what she had to walk through, it still wasn't enough to separate her from the love of God, nor principalities, nor power, nor things present, nor things to come. Nothing was able to separate her from the love of God.
Go deep, go deep, go deep, go deep. So what I know about her is that she loved the Lord. And if there was a grace that carried her all the way through, it was the same grace that carried her home. And I just want to close by saying this, because Apostle Paul said something else that just fascinates me as I read the word sometimes. He said, what then say you to these things? That if God be for you, who can be against you? So say whatever you want. God was for her and she is resting, singing with the angels. God bless you, family. God bless you. God bless you, Whitney.
That's right. He was prophesizing. Go see good deeds this Friday. That's all he was doing. Get your ass out there and go see good deeds. Come on.
When did he say go see good deeds?
When I said he said it. When he said, what say you now of these things? I said, go to the theater.
Oh, no. Come on, man. That's not what he said. That's what you're ascribing to it. But yes. He never said, go see good deeds. He never said it.
He got up on that stage. He flew her body in on his private jet. He went out there and got out there and he was doing nothing but promoting the film. That's all he
did. When did he promote his film? Show me, tell me the part where he promoted his film.
Okay, he didn't.
When did it happen?
He didn't. I'm not saying that he did. I'm just saying that the whole act was nothing more than it was. Listen to me. If his movie is not number one next week, I don't know what is.
Okay. But you're still ascribing the fact that, because all I heard was he was talking about, you know, her and her alone. He never once mentioned his film. He never once mentioned, okay, you know, and you can see that in a film that I have directed and produced or whatever at a theater near you. Never once. So when did it happen? Why are you still saying that? The only reason he said anything?
Maybe the film that he was producing, that he was promoting, was the film he's going to do on Whitney Houston's life.
Yeah, you know he's going to.
So maybe, but there's still no proof of that, correct?
I never said there was any proof of it. I'm just saying that Tyler Perry and Whitney Houston, when have these two ever been in the same realm other than some diner 2 years ago?
Wow.
And if it was in a
now, wait a minute. Now, when you were just espousing BB, who wasn't talking about her, now you're saying, and you were singing his praises.
Wait, BB was talking about her.
Yeah, BB was talking about her in a way that I said was honest and truthful. And
honest?
Yes, it was honest and truthful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what I heard personally, what I thought I heard from Tyler Perry, had no reflection on Whitney Houston. Talk about, oh, she always went to God. She always talked about my Lord and my Savior. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, wait a minute. Think about what you just said. He was saying that she always talked to God. He did say that he met her, correct?
Yeah, but the point is that
he only met her like once.
He met her once for an hour and a half. And if it was 2 years ago, an hour and a half, he knew that she was on drugs. He knew that she was on drugs, and he never once said, hey, Whitney, get your ass off the drugs.
But that's not what he said. That's not what he said, though. What he said was, even in – can I finish?
Let him finish.
Even though he might have met her for a half an hour or an hour and a half, whatever, what he said was, what I got from it was she kept her mind on God.
Okay.
She kept her mind on God and her lips on a crack pipe?
Wow.
Is that what he should have said?
Wow. Damn. That's just awful. I can't believe you said that.
Or her nose on a straw.
Ooh, that's even worse.
All right.
That's all right. Let's take a break.
Hey, Mary.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a spiritual person, God-fearing, God-loving, whatever?
Wait, let's see what your point is about this before we go to break. What's your point about this? Because I want to go to break. Give me 2 minutes. Go ahead. You're asking her whether or not she considers herself a God-fearing person. Mary, do you?
God-fearing, God-loving.
Yes. I do.
Okay. Have you or have you not done things that would be considered going against God?
Oh, all right.
Most
no,
definitely.
Never mind. I know exactly where you're going with this. Fine. No problem. When we come back, we'll talk about two radio hosts. We'll talk about two radio hosts that got canceled. Well, they got suspended from their radio show. Paulie Whitney used to a crack home. When we return, we'll sell the radio.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, so I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right.
It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star.
I love you,
Come
Mom.
On, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
And welcome back to Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. And happy President's Day to each and every one of you on February 20th, 2000. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. You can log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Reese on Radio, and on Twitter. And it's 347-308-8701. Anyway, we've got a big announcement today, and we're going to give that in the next hour. Big announcement for Reese on the Radio. And I'm telling you, when I say this right now, this announcement is big. Bigger than anything that I've done in a long time. A long time. And I think God is speaking. Speaking. I got Mama to thank. I have Mama to thank. We'll get into who Mama is. Trust me, it's important. Get into that later. But we were talking about Whitney Houston in that god-awful performance by Stevie Wonder and Alicia Keys. I'm never buying another record. I don't want to even see them on TV. When I see them on TV, I'm a turn channel. I don't want anything about that. Because Alicia Keys, you should not be allowed ever, ever to do this. Ever to do this.
And it's a long, long way to hang on.
I apologize for any of you who have tuned out Alicia Keys. I apologize. That was just god awful.
No, it wasn't.
It was so.
Listen, she was crying. She was upset.
Yeah, you notice in the beginning when she's playing the piano and she gets by the computer, she's done this.
No, she's not.
Doing the whole thing. You think I'm kidding? JC, get the beginning of the audio when she's playing the piano. You saw
it.
She's. Ding, do, do, ding, do, do, ding, do, do, ding. She's doing it through the whole microphone. Want everybody to know she's tearing up. That's what she's doing the whole thing. She was god awful.
Yeah, that part I didn't care for. I wanted her to stop the moaning and the sniffing.
Yes, exactly.
But she was crying. She was clearly
Alicia Miskeed.
Stop it. Now, we all know that Alicia Keys can blow. You know that. I know that. We all know.
She should have been blowing into a breathalyzer because I think she was drunk. Because Whitney's an angel!
Maybe.
Somebody was drinking before the funeral? Started at noon.
Maybe she was hanging out with Bobby Christina.
Whoa. Okay. Speaking of cruel and unusual comments, two radio hosts were suspended over their comments about Whitney Houston. John and Ken show. They're out in California or wherever they are. Who cares? But this is what it is, because what they said is more important than who it is that they are. Here's what they said on their airwaves that got them suspended. And we'll talk to the panelists and listen. After you listen, we'll see whether or not they think it was offensive enough for people to get suspended.
We find out that she denies using crack.
Yeah, I know.
Cocaine, though, she didn't deny.
Yeah, all right. So she's cracked out for 20 years. And we heard about, you know, how obnoxious she was at these parties. And she's doing handstands, and she's babbling like an idiot and running around. And you
wet
know,
hair.
Yeah, she's a mess.
Mismatched clothes.
Yeah, it's bag lady time. Now, she's been doing this for 20 years. Blew through her money, ruined her voice.
I heard she blew through $100 million.
Oh, yeah, she was for practical purposes, broke. You know, I'm sure there's always royalty money coming in, but...
Crack would have been cheaper.
So, how much of a pain in the ass do you think she was? Can you imagine you're Clive Davis, and she has not been... She hasn't had her head screwed on right for 20 years, and at some point, you're just sick of it all. And so is everybody else in the industry, all her friends and hangers-on, and just everybody who knew her had to deal with it. It's like, oh, Jesus.
But you wait to put the tuxedo on.
Here comes the crack hoe again. What's she going to do? Oh, look at that. She's doing handstands next to the pool. Very good, crack hoe. Nice trick. But what? After a while, everybody's exhausted. And then you find out she's dead. It's like, really? Took this long?
So that's what... I don't know which is more rugged. And I'm not going to use the word offensive. But it's pretty rugged. It was harsh language. But he called her a crack hoe. And referring to her as a crack hoe was what they considered offensive. Now, I've got to ask our distinguished panel. Of course, as you know them, the Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery, Mary Mary, why are you bugging him, JC, the producer. Folks, do you think this was a suspendable act? James, we'll let you go first.
Who, me?
Yeah, James, you go first.
Oh, no. Actually, I don't think it was a suspendable act.
You don't?
No.
Okay, so you think that it was in the realm of acceptable language?
Well, acceptable is subjective, all right? Everyone, again, I mean, even they said, wait, hold on, even they said.
Smartly said. Go ahead, James.
All right. Even they said, you know, now that she's dead, and this happens regardless, you know, the person could be as personally reprehensible while they're alive, okay? But, you know, once they die, then there's this prevalent thing to make them into some type of tragic saint.
I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't think it was a suspendable offense. Do I think they should have been fired? No. They spoke what's on people's minds.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think that's what we do in radio. I think we all sort of say what some of the listeners or some of the viewers or some of the people who are in the regular, I guess, in the regular dynamic would be thinking themselves. I'm pretty sure there were people out there who were referring to her as, you know, sort of not the crack hoe comment, but just like, you know, that's sort of like getting pissed off at her behavior. Oh, look who's doing handstands by the pool, you know, and sort of sick of it.
Well, yeah. And then again, these are the same people who will make excuses for what's her name?
Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse or being that she's died again.
Right. How about Robert Downey Jr.?
Thank you. Robert Downey Jr. hasn't died yet.
Right.
But still, you know, when he's doing his shtick, everyone is reporting on it.
Mm-hmm.
You bring it out to people. It's fodder. And then when he goes into his, when they want to go into their little fake rehab and things like that, then they want to make excuses for, okay, well, look, you know, we tore him down because he was doing this. Now it looks like he's trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps. Let's bring him up until he dies.
I hear you.
And then he's just a saint.
Well, I agree with you there, but you don't think that in any way that what they said was offensive.
No, not offensive. Because fact of the matter is, she did have drugs. She did have public meltdowns. And
That all leads into my own personal feelings. These people are human beings. Just because they're in the public eye doesn't mean that they're always going to do the right things. They're human beings.
Well, no, I agree with you there. But I think that they put these guys, John and Ken, in a particular standard that said because she had died and because she is a celebrity, that they should have behaved a certain way, or there should be a level of decorum because she's dead and a national figure in some regards, that calling her a crack hole was demeaning and there should be punishment because there's going to be backlash by the audience or by fans of Whitney Houston.
But why
I don't know about that.
Why should they have to have some type of decorum about her when she didn't have it about herself?
I agree with you there, too.
She was the one getting high.
Right.
You know, why should we, the people, and I was a fan of Whitney Houston. I cried during the four-hour funeral, which was horrible, but I cried.
You cry a lot, don't you?
I cry a lot. Is that what you said? Well, considering who I'm surrounded by. No, I'm kidding.
Wow.
Kidding, psych. No, I mean they shouldn't have been suspended. Come on now, it's stupid.
We got a lot of suspensions to talk about today.
We sure do. And bringing that into the story about the other people that were fired
and suspended
for things that they said. It's just so stupid. I mean, we have freedom of speech that you can say whatever you want to say. It doesn't matter if other people are offended. I mean, she offended herself.
JC,
you know?
you got to come in. JC, are you there yet? JC, can you chime in yet? JC? Nope, he's not ready yet. Okay, JC's got some other stuff he's doing. But yeah, I found it. I don't know. I don't think it was offensive enough that they should get suspended. Thank goodness they didn't get fired.
Well, but and she was body crap.
It was only the first step.
Say again?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on?
No. JC, I mean, do you have anything to say about the John and – did you hear the John and Ken comments that were made?
I heard it. I think they should have been suspended. Come on, they were very insensitive.
Okay, because, you see, he's a Whitney Houston fan. So this is –
I'm speaking from a fan point of view, but, come on. I think it would be politically correct to call anybody on radio a crack hoe. Come on. I mean, we're not talking like jokes on TV. We're talking on the radio with free openly to the public all day, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
JC, do you hear – I mean, do you listen to Rush Limbaugh?
Now, if they called her a crack hoe like 2 o'clock in the morning, then go for it. Hell, I would have.
JC, now that doesn't even make any sense. Do you hear how Rush Limbaugh talks?
No, you don't know FCC rules to understand that. Am I a Rush Limbaugh fan? No.
But if
what does Rush Limbaugh say? It's offensive.
Oh, he was a little offensive today.
No, he wasn't.
For Rush Limbaugh?
No, he wasn't.
He was always offensive.
Look, the bottom line.
You
only
say that because you're a Rush Limbaugh.
Look,
fan.
That's right. I listen to him because sometimes
he makes good points.
Yeah, my point
but
is,
he's crazy.
I
didn't listen to him before, man. Like, never mind.
Excuse me, JC. You're right. I didn't listen to him before, but I do listen to him now. He comes on 105.9 FM on Best Radio, and then 6:30 on the AM station. Yes, I do listen to him.
Rush Limbaugh is my hero.
Stop mentioning that man's name and giving him free press.
Yeah, but he doesn't need it.
He doesn't need free press.
But the
no,
bottom
does he deserve it?
Bottom line is that what they said was look, it may have been offensive, but it's not suspendable in my view. But speaking of being offensive, have you guys heard any of the Whitney Houston jokes yet?
Not yet. I mean, the only jokes I've heard are the ones that we've talked about that you've heard.
Right.
Going to repeat them here.
Well, come on, JC. You heard some Whitney Houston jokes. I want to hear them.
No, actually, the one that I heard was someone said something to the fact that she committed suicide, and Bobby followed suit just as, and wrote her a note saying, "Now we have something in common," something like that. It was stupid.
Was,
as a matter of fact, it was an independent wrestler that said something that idiotic on his Facebook page.
Well,
that's about it.
Do you think it's too soon to do Whitney Houston jokes, James?
Is it too soon to do? The hell are they still? Well, the fact that they sent my boo into the ground looking like Tammy Faye Baker, probably not.
Well, listen, no one was paying attention to her when she was on when she was walking on the ground. So, you know, why is everything such a big deal?
Excuse me, but I laughed at every single what's the name of that damn show on Saturday night?
JC.
Wait, what'd you say? Who's your name and what?
The show that comes on Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Yeah,
what?
Deborah, what's her name?
Oh, Mad TV.
Mad TV. Every Whitney Houston skit they had, I enjoyed.
Okay.
Even while she was out there.
JC, let me tell
you. I'm not going to be a hypocrite about it.
JC, I share your fanism.
Fanaticism,
excuse me, with Whitney Houston, okay? I was a huge Whitney Houston fan until she started putting the glass in her mouth and ruined herself.
Then you were never a fan.
No, I was. Excuse me, I made my finger bleed at the age of 13, calling in C100 win tickets.
Mary Darling. Fan is short for fanatic.
Right.
And fanatics don't turn their backs
on whom they
admire. Especially for that type of reason.
JC is a true fanatic because he'll never turn his back on it. James, what were you saying?
I was saying, let's stop saying that, she kept putting the pipe in her mouth, all right? Because even in the infamous interview that she did, she said it herself, I don't do crack. Crack is whack. I'm too rich to do crack.
I'm Rick James. Yeah, okay, whatever. She was smoking crack. You know it, and I know it. Everybody knows it. She was hitting the rock. Yeah. No one wants to be deemed. So it's better. Wait. It's James. Let me finish. It's better that you were freebasing and smoking coke, powder cocaine out of a pipe or out of aluminum foil than it is that you were smoking crack with some charboil. I mean, does that make it any better? But there's a stigma about crackheads.
Okay, well, James, what did you say?
What you just said is the same thing. Whether you're doing it out of a tin foil or whatever.
She said she was freebasing, and freebasing is not the same as smoking crack rock cocaine. It is totally two different things. Does it matter? She was a drug addict. She ruined herself. She fell to the drugs, and it was very, very unfortunate because when I was a kid, I wanted to be just like Whitney Houston. I wanted to be able to sing like Whitney. I loved Whitney. I made my little finger bleed trying to win, and I won tickets on Z100 being the 100th caller to see her in concert at Madison Square Garden. When she came out on stage, I cried. I was so elated that I was there.
Are you disappointed by her passing?
I am disappointed, and I cried for her, but the point is she was a drug addict. I mean, no one can – we talked about it when she was alive, but now that she's not here, everybody has to pay due respect.
We have to act like the demise – like the fact that she was a product of her own demise, we have to act like that didn't happen.
Yeah, and it happened. It is what it is. Get over it. She was Bobby's crack hoe, and Bobby was her crack pimp. We know that.
And here we go. Blaming Bobby. Come on.
No. I didn't blame Bobby. I said she was Bobby's crack hoe and Bobby was her crack pimp. And we all know that. They were a team. They were like Bonnie and Clyde of the crackheads.
Bobby was a crack hoe too.
They were crack hoes together. I just referred to him as a pimp because he was the man.
Thank you. At least you admit it.
Well, nonetheless, so you haven't heard any Whitney Houston jokes yet? And do you think that it's appropriate that she's been dead a little over a week? Do you think it's appropriate to have a jokes about her just yet?
She hasn't even been dead over a little over a week.
She died on Saturday. It's Monday now.
Did she?
Yeah.
Actually, it's been less than a week.
No, she died Saturday afternoon at 3:55.
Was it?
Yeah.
Damn, where was
that? Look, all I'm saying is, yes, Mary, you're right. She put herself out there, all right? And your foibles are going to be talked about.
And they should be.
And they should be. Especially if, even in my own opinion, if you're that rich, then you should be able to afford, and you have the entourage, you should be able to afford people to go out and get your drugs for you. You shouldn't be going out to clubs, and this is anybody, not just Whitney. You shouldn't be going out to clubs and putting yourself in a position where any one of these
paparazzi... Where you publicize your drug addiction?
Huh?
Where you publicize your drug addiction? You should be a closet drug addict?
Well, everybody's a closet drug addict.
Yeah,
anybody
actually...
is closet.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, JC, you there? Let me ask you a question, JC, if you're there. I'd like to ask you a question, if I could, JC. Just, I want to make sure JC is back on the line with us. JC, you're not with us? Is he, why is he not with us? Is there something going on, JC? Can he hear us? JC, are you there? JC's not there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, all right. Let me ask you a question. Do you drive, JC?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. What's the difference between Whitney Houston and your car?
What is the difference?
You should ask what kind of car you
drive.
Yes,
what's the difference between Whitney Houston and your car?
Wow. I'm almost afraid to ask.
Take a good guess.
Well, let me ask you a question. Before I answer this, who is your favorite music artist?
I don't know who it is, be honest with you. My favorite singer is up in the air. I like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Mary?
That was Whitney.
Mary, how about yours?
Favorite?
Yeah.
There's too many good ones out there to pick.
I just need you to pick one that you absolutely love, because if you offend me about Whitney Houston, I'm coming back for revenge.
What's the difference between Whitney Houston
I have no clue.
Your car can hit 50.
I'm going on mute.
No. Wait. Let me ask you another one.
JC, you are truly torn about this, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
You know what's the one thing that we know about Whitney Houston's death?
What's that?
She no longer has to wait to exhale.
Did you write these?
No.
Did you write these?
No.
Hey, did you hear that Whitney died? Unfortunately, it wasn't the TV show.
Okay, that one I don't get.
There's a TV show called Whitney on NBC.
Oh.
I'm gonna take a break. Mary?
Yes.
Don't go to commercial.
No, don't go to commercial. I can assure you Van Halen will suffer. Yeah, you thought I forgot?
Yeah.
Van Halen will suffer. And Mary, when I find out, I can't mess with Rihanna because I love her.
I find out that she denies using crack. Cocaine, no, she didn't deny.
Yeah, all right. So she's cracked out for 20 years. And we heard about how obnoxious she was at these parties. And she's doing handstands, and she's babbling like an idiot, and running around, and
wet hair.
Yeah, she's a mess.
Mismatched clothes.
Yeah, it's bag lady time. Now, she's been doing this for 20 years. Blew through her money, ruined her voice.
I heard she blew through $100 million.
Oh yeah, she was for practical purposes broke. I'm sure there's always royalty money coming in, but
crack would have been cheaper.
So, how much of a pain in the ass do you think she was? Can you imagine? You're Clive Davis, and she has not been. She hasn't had her head screwed on right for 20 years. And at some point, you're just sick of it all. And so is everybody else in the industry, all her friends and hangers-on. And just everybody who knew her had to deal with it. It's like, oh, Jesus.
But you wait to put the tuxedo on.
Here comes the crack hoe again. What's she going to do? Oh, look at that. She's doing handstands next to the pool. Very good, crack hoe. Nice trick. But what? I've after a while, everybody's exhausted. And then you find out she's dead. It's like, really? Took this long?
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb in the streets of white snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help send against you.
Top of the hour, it's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. The number is 347-308-8701. Top of the hour, just after 1 minute. After the hour, 8:01 on Eastern Standard Time. This hour, we are going to be making Reese on the Radio's big announcement. So it's going to be happening today, and it's a big deal. So we'll be talking about that in a little bit. Unless, of course, this particular subject matter takes on a life of its own, and I'm sure it will. It's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio. So when you hear what it is you're about to hear, I've got to ask people what the big deal is. I've got to ask people what the big deal is. Because this was something that I think was completely overblown. I looked it up. I'm going to check it again. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to check it right now. Let me just go to dictionary.com. No. Actually, I won't do that. Let's go to Google. I'm going to type this phrase in. Let's see if we can get a definition for the word, or for the term. And just so I make sure that I don't screw this up, I want to make sure that I read the exact phrasing of the term. And we all know what is offensive in this world. We know what can be considered offensive. And what isn't offensive? So, maybe I should just play the audio. As everybody's heard, Jeremy Lin, who's the point guard for the New York Knicks, virtually out of nowhere has become the biggest sensation in the NBA, National Basketball Association, for those idiots who are living in under a rock. Is Chinese with the Harvard University. And, he's pretty much a bench warmer. And there have been people who are outraged at a comment that was on an ESPN headline on ESPN.com. And the writer of the headline has been fired, and a gentleman who is a sportscaster on ESPN named Max Brodus has been suspended for 30 days for saying this.
He's handled everything very well, as you said, unflappable. But if there is a chink in the armor, where can Lin improve his game?
Jeremy Lin had won six straight games. He lost the seventh game.
against a team that the Knicks should have won. And in using this phrase,
he's handled everything very well, as you said, unflappable. But if there is a chink in the armor, where can Lynn improve his game?
A chink in the armor has now become a phrase of debate. And by using that phrase, it got the guy who wrote it on ESPN.com, got him fired. And Max Brilos, who said those words, has been suspended for 30 days because he used the term chink in the armor because Jeremy Lin is Asian and the word chink is offensive, even though the term chink in the armor has been a term used for eons. Means when there is a weakness in the opponent, a chink in the armor.
A fracture in the fissure.
So because they used the word chink in the armor, we have somebody suspended for it. Now, should they have, see, because I can ask the obvious question here, folks. I can ask the obvious question. Should they have been sensitive because Jeremy Lin is Asian and avoided the word chink at all cost? Or have we become so politically correct, that even the use of a common phrase can be deemed insensitive whenever someone chooses. See, political correctness is not about standards. It's not about standards. It's about when one deems them to be a standard. Now, Mary and I had this discussion this weekend when I talked to her about a New Jersey politician who said that he would not be niggardly when dealing with the city's budget. And a black woman in the audience was offended at the word niggardly because it had the word nigger in it. Now, I rarely use that word on the air, but I have to use it in order to make a point. So because he used the word niggardly, because there was an association to her by her own standards, niggardly, it sounds like you're applying the word nigger to niggardly. She had no grasp of the English language, never heard the word before. She only heard what she wanted to hear. And by saying, hey, here's a team that's been unstoppable. Jeremy Lin has been unstoppable. He's got triple doubles, 14, 15 assists, scoring 28 points. The guy's kicking behind on the court. And he loses to a team that he should have beat. Is there a chink in the armor? Chink? Did you say chink? He's Chinese. That's a pun, right? Is it because of this? Is it because of this that people are going overboard about the chink in the armor comment? This is from Saturday Night Live this weekend.
Welcome to New York Sports Now. I'm Dan Mardell. For a special report on Knicks point guard number 17, Jeremy Lin, and the Lin sanity surrounding him. Now, despite the Knicks' loss in New Orleans, the Big Apple is still in the middle of a Jeremy Linvasion. Fellas, do you have Lin sanity?
Hey, you better lock me up. I mean, I am criminally Lin sane.
Oh, yeah.
My feelings are Lin tense. It's Lin describable. I mean, I am literally Lin love with this Jeremy Lin.
We all agree we'll never get tired of Lin pun.
Well, as Charlie Sheen would say, Linen.
That's another thing we never got tired of. Yeah. Now, with all the talk swirling around Lin, some of the discussion has gotten racially charged. We've seen derogatory comments from Fox Sports' Jason Whitlock and ESPN.com. The bottom line is, the kid's a great basketball player, and race has nothing to do with it. The New York Post says he's amazing.
I mean, he's unstoppable. He's like that sign said at Wednesday's game, Lin is the Knicks'
good fortune.
He's sweet, not sour.
He turned Kobe into Kobe beef.
And Kobe's like, hey, I ordered fried chicken.
Hey, yo, what's up?
Race out of this. Fellas, Jeremy Lin had some amazing moments with this week. What were some of your favorite Lin incidents?
Well, I'd say it was in the fourth quarter against the Lakers. Lin goes to the corner and me love you long time, sends a three.
I gotta say, Knicks Raptors last Tuesday. 5 seconds left, Lin goes to the top of the key and wax on, wax off, Mr. Miyagi. Game winning shot. The Knicks Kings when Lin passed it to Amari Stoudemire. Stoudemire was dancing like Maury Povich just told him, you are not the father.
Yo. He was not dead.
I'm finding the line.
If he was, okay. I bet he was saying, domo arigato, Mr. Lin Bato.
Now that's funny.
Switching gears for a moment. It's Black History Month. Let's take a moment to honor a great African-American athlete.
Jackie Robinson, an amazing athlete who broke down barriers. Robinson endured name-calling and racial taunts, but he persevered. And that's why today the sports world is tolerant.
Dynasty! New York Sports Now caught up with Jeremy Lin last Tuesday. Let's take a look.
Yeah, we talked about...
Ha-ha. It was a great honor to throw the ball today. The pool was large and the men tall like stone. Ha-ha. Soon we battle Dallas and I will try my tiger...
So is that part of the reason why that using the term chink in the armor is because there was all of this quote-unquote goings-on about Lin this, Lin that, Lin sanity, Happy Valentine's Day. There was all of this other stuff going on. Do you think that all played a role in, oh, my God, they went too far? Because ESPN got into trouble when they showed a picture of Jeremy Lin popping out of a fortune cookie. They showed Jeremy Lin. And now, of course, you know, the Jeremy Lin thing with the chink in the armor. It's like with everything that they've been doing with Lin – now they're finding something new, and now they're actually trying to get people to tone it down. And so now these people, especially at ESPN, have now been sort of considered racist for making these references. James, did you get a chance to hear this?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And actually, I agree with you.
You agree with whom?
Actually, I agree with you. I think it's because of...
Can you pay your pass?
I think because everything has been Lin's sanity and everything, that now people are starting to equate everything with just that phraseology.
Right, okay.
But chink in the armor has been used way before anything.
Yeah, there's no association with Asians whatsoever with that reference.
Right. It just so happened that he used it in this point of phrase.
Don't you think that he may have used it in this point of phrase purposefully?
Well, no, I don't think that he was saying that at all. In fact,
but how convenient was it to use that phrase?
It may have been convenient, but in most cases, when everybody else has been using purposeful phrases with his name, here was one of those times where he was just using a chink in the armor to paraphrase the Knicks loss, and now it's being referred to as a racial slur.
No, and I understand that, but it was prime time for him to use that phrase.
Do you think that they were trying to see how far they could go with the whole Asian thing?
I mean, I don't know. I can't say what they were doing. I don't know why he did it, but it was a prime time.
Okay, do you believe what he said was considered racist?
No. I wouldn't consider it racist.
Did he deserve a 30-day suspension? And the writer on the blog, on the ESPN website, should he have been fired?
No. Not if these people can get on radio and call Whitney Houston a crack house.
JC, any thoughts on this?
Wow. Did I think they? Yeah, I think they probably went a little bit too far.
Yeah, but what about what about the paper? Was it the Daily News or the
New York Post
said
New
that he was
amazing.
Amazing. A M A S I A N.
That's a compliment. Should be.
Well, but a chink in the armor doesn't. I mean, it has nothing to do with Chinese people.
Yeah,
unless,
I don't.
I mean, you and listen. I mean, you and.
I wonder if, do these people own Papa John's?
Whom?
Does ESPN own Papa John's?
No, what? What does that mean?
Do you remember when the waitress wrote, the lady with the chinky eyes, the lady with the chinky eyes?
Oh, right, that's right. Mary's talking about when the, when the woman went to a Papa John's and the girl who worked at Papa John's put on her receipt the lady with the chinky eyes. That was absolutely, for me, that was funny. I don't care. It's absolutely sad that anybody would deem any of this in any particular way, as racist.
And the fact of the matter, he's Asian. So what? I mean, what does he think? I want to hear what he thinks.
He didn't find it offensive.
And if he didn't find it offensive, then no one else should.
Absolutely not. But they don't care about what he thinks in that regard.
But that's part of his fame, that he is Asian and that he's so
he knows
great.
And Jeremy Lin will
so
be the first.
Play up to that.
Yeah, everybody, including Jeremy Lin, knows that the reason why he's been getting this attention is because he's playing a position that normally we don't have a lot of Asians in his role. There are not a lot who are point guards. The fact that he's an amazing player and he's Asian, the attention that has been brought to him, as Floyd Mayweather Jr. brought up, was that the reason why they're paying attention to Jeremy Lin is the fact that he's Asian. People are angered the fact that Floyd Mayweather would say that.
Or they angered that this Asian is upping them.
No, that's not true. People are angered that Floyd Mayweather brought attention to something obvious. And as much as they, you see, in other words, if they tout Jeremy Lin and never mentions his ethnicity, they can't be accused of being racist. They can't be accused of ascribing his success as a part of his Asian ethnicity. You just go, no, the kid's just amazing. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's Asian. He's just amazing.
Well, he is amazing because he's amazing. It doesn't have anything to do with Asian. But because he's
Asian.
But
we know that the undertone, it's like, look, we're really recognizing Jeremy Lin because he's great. But the truth of the matter is, he's great. And that Asian fact is really, really making us take notice because we've never seen an Asian play like this in the NBA. This guy could be look at the pandemonium that's out there, and everybody's going nuts.
And it's good marketing for them too.
Of course it is, but the bottom line is that nobody wants to flat out say that. Look, we are really, really acknowledging this guy because he's a good player who happens to be Asian, or he's an Asian who plays this well. We'll never tell you that. We'll never admit to it.
In plain words.
But we know that people already get it. So it's sort of like an unspoken sort of rule within the community, or within the NBA community, where we're all saying, look, man, we know you know why we're paying attention to this. But we're never going to be caught saying to you, man, this Chinese boy can play. We're never ever going to be caught saying that. But we already know that people are sitting up there going, you know, you have that in your private conversations. When you guys argue at the bar or argue at home watching the game on TV, you guys make that distinction. But we as press people or we people as sports commentators, we are not allowed to bring that up. We know that's why we're bringing it up, but we'll never tell. And it's dishonest. It's dishonest advertising. We know why everybody's talking about Jeremy Lin. We can claim that it's because he's a player off the bench. We can say everything we want about him being a player off the bench.
Well, that's a part of it, but the other, but the bigger part.
But the
part
bigger
of it,
part about it is look
that
at that Chinese
Asian
boy play.
Player off the bench.
That's the bottom line, and that's what it is just saying.
Like we didn't know, we didn't know that the Asians could do this.
Exactly, we didn't know there was an Asian out there who could play this, and it's a great marketing tool for the NBA. It's it. How do we turn that into something profitable? The way we did for guys like Yao Ming.
And the way that they do it is to talk about it.
Yeah, but again, they don't ever want to bring up the fact that he's Asian.
But you can't, but they don't have to. He is Asian. We can see that with our own eyes.
Yeah,
so why not? I mean, what's.
They want, I believe that these people.
They
want
to be politically correct.
No. These people in the sports world want to mention the fact that he's Asian. But they are willing to go as far as they can. They want to know. Everybody wants to know, how far can we go with this Asian thing? Because we believe that that's a real key factor to all this. How can we tie his Asian ethnicity into this to make this a story that makes it even more exciting or more excitable? I mean, James, you got to be able to agree with that, can't you?
Yeah, I've been sitting here trying to say that, and according to your last comment, I wholeheartedly agree. Everybody wants to latch on to the fact that statistically and popularly, even if that's a word,
yeah.
Popular opinion is this is a Cinderella story.
Right. But the Cinderella story in and of itself is more to do with the fact that this was a bench player who was about to lose his job with the Knicks. A third team was about to bounce him. And he comes out and plays in a game that's supposed to be insignificant. And he has a phenomenal game. He was a nobody. But it the hell if it didn't grab the media's attention and go, who is this Asian guy playing in a black-dominated league? In a black-dominated sport, and going out there showing those Negroes what's up.
Well, you know what? It wasn't even that, because it always happens that way, no matter what color you are. Same thing happened with Yao Ming.
Right.
Because he was tall.
Right. Tall, exactly. I mentioned that last week. The fact that Yao Ming was tall, which is uncharacteristic of most Asians, especially from people in China. How could there be a 7'1"? He was a novelty act. He was novelty.
Right. Novelty? No, that's how they wanted to tout him. But the fact that he could actually play, it wasn't that he was just in there. He wasn't just standing in the paint holding up his arms.
Right.
The man could play.
Right. But again, this was taking away.
From the stereotypes.
Right, exactly. It was taking away from the stereotypes. But a guy like Jeremy Lin, who's getting in there playing against what they consider a black-dominated sport, and Jeremy Lin, this was an opportunity to globalize him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sportscasters latched onto that. They were like, look at this Asian go. Just don't tell anybody he's Asian.
Without saying, look at this Asian go.
Right, exactly.
But look at our finances go through the roof.
Yeah, well,
Asians
of course.
Are gonna jump on this bandwagon like there's no tomorrow.
Of course, but as Reese was saying, it's gone overboard, because when you use a term that, and especially with us, all right, the three of us, or the four of us, excuse me, JC, but with the four of us who. One of our main standpoints on our relationship is the fact that we can turn a phrase. We know the English language.
Right.
And we use it to its fullest extent with each other. But it always amazes me when other people hear us, they see who we are, or, you know, who we are in front of them, who they see in front of them. And you always get that shocked expression or that gasp. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we look at them like, yeah, and? You know?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. I think you're absolutely right there. You agree with me, James, and I see that you do. You agree with me that ESPN and all of these sports writers, sports commentators, who, no matter who it is that they are, I think that they, what they wanted to do was exploit his Asian ethnicity.
Without being touted as...
exploitative.
Well, without being exploitative. Without being exploitative. They were willing to cross the line as much as they possibly could. But, you know, I think that
they still don't want to be, but they don't want us as listeners and as the watching audience, you know, they want to be, okay, I'm not racist, but, you know, I'm going to crawl up to that line as much as I possibly can.
Right.
And still say I'm not racist.
Well, this is the reason why I think the SNL skit was so good. And again, I criticize Saturday Night Live all the time. But what was great about it was, and I think who they mocked, in a lot of ways, who they mocked was sports writers. And what it is that they do, they knew, bottom line, that I don't care what it is you think you're pulling off to the rest of the public, truth of the matter is that you are amazed by this boy, not just because he can play, but you really want to play up his ethnicity. You are dying to. And they played it over the top, and I love the fact that every time, if you watch the video on YouTube, what I love about it, what was so funny, this is one commentator who makes that comment about Amari Stoudemire, when he said that he was dancing like he just found out from Maury Povich, you are not the father, and everybody's outraged. That's a racial stereotype. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it talks about what's considered the level of racial insensitivity. With Lynn, we can do whatever he's wanting.
And what's not.
Yeah, what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. And that's why I think it was brilliant. And so, you know, that's what I loved about the entire skit. Anyway, we'll take a break.
Why I thought it was hilarious is because, again, all right, touting a black man who actually matches the stereotype or doesn't match the stereotype is considered offensive. Right. But here it is, Lynn, who's not considered a stereotype.
By any means.
By any means, not yet. So we can get away with this one. We're going to stay away from the black stereotypes because everybody knows those.
Yeah, but
so
you know what it was?
We're going to stay away from that. But this one is right. We can do whatever we want right now.
Right, right. It's a new audience. It's a new audience.
Yep.
Let's see how far we can go.
Yep.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. And we absolutely right. Anyway, we'll take a break when we come back. Reese on the radio's big announcement. As I put myself on mute, I apologize. It's Reese on the radio. When we come back, we'll make Reese's big announcement when we return right here on Reese on the Radio. Stick around.
Welcome to New York Sports Now, Dan Mardell. It's our special report on Knicks point guard number 17, Jeremy Lin, and the Lin sanity surrounding him. Now, despite the Knicks' loss in New Orleans, the Big Apple is still in the middle of a Jeremy Linvasion. Fellas, do you have Lin sanity?
Hey, you better lock me up. I mean, I am criminally Linsane.
Oh, yeah.
My feelings are Lin-tense. It's Lin-describable. I mean, I am literally Lin-love with this Jeremy Lin.
We can all agree we'll never get tired of Lin puns.
Well, as Charlie Sheen would say, Linen!
That's another thing we never got tired of. Yeah. Now, with all the talk swirling around Lin, some of the discussion has gotten racially charged. We've seen derogatory comments from Fox Sports' Jason Whitlock and ESPN.com. The bottom line is, the kid's a great basketball player, and race has nothing to do with it. The New York Post says he's amazing.
At Wednesday's game, Lin is the Knicks' good fortune.
He's sweet.
not sour.
He turned Kobe into Kobe beef.
And Kobe's like, hey, I ordered fried chicken.
Hey, yo, what's up with that?
Race out of this. Fellas, Jeremy Lin had some amazing moments with this week. What were some of your favorite Lin incidences?
Well, I'd say it was in the fourth quarter against the Lakers. Lin goes to the corner and me love you long time, sink the three.
I've got to say Knicks Raptors last Tuesday. 5 seconds left. Lin goes to the top of the key and wax on, wax off, Mr. Miyagi. Game winning shot.
I picked the Knicks when Lin passed it to Amari Stoudemire. Stoudemire was dancing like Maury Povich just told him, you are not the father.
Yo. He was not dead.
I'm finding the line.
If he was, okay. I bet he was saying, domo arigato, Mr. Lin Bato.
Now that's funny. That's funny.
Switching gears for a moment. It's Black History Month. Let's take a moment to honor a great African-American athlete.
Jackie Robinson, an amazing athlete who broke down barriers. Robinson endured name-calling and racial taunts, but he persevered. And that's why today the sports world is tolerant.
New York Sports Now caught up with Jeremy Lin last Tuesday. Let's take a look.
Yeah, we talked about...
It was a great honor to throw the ball today. The court was large and the men tall like stone. Soon we battle Dallas and I will try my tiger claw technique.
Switch the audio. That person will be reprimanded.
You know, I think there's something glaring that we are all overlooking. I mean, what's going to happen when Carmelo Anthony comes back?
He'll be like that Chinese in his MSG. See what I did there?
Yeah, I saw that.
Hey, Carmelo's going to see Lin in the locker room and be like, excuse me, are we playing ping pong here?
Well, he may not see him at all because my homie Carmelo rolls in late.
Yo, hey, tell you one more time.
That's extremely offensive.
Yeah, the notion that an African-American man are late for work is an outdated and ignorant stereotype.
True. I'm sorry. I thought we were having that kind of fun. Dan, back me up.
I apologize to our viewers at home for the comments of Joe Dixon. They were Lin-sensitive and politically Lin-correct. He has been fired. Here in turn, we'll talk Jeremy Lin with comedian Don Rickles and a crotchety World War II veteran. Live from New York, it's Saturday Night!
It's Reese on the radio. We are back. Minutes after the hour. And as I promised each and every one of you, I was going to be making a huge announcement today. And it's now the appropriate time to make that announcement. So if you know anybody out there in the Twitterverse or the Facebookverse or the whatever, email your friends, call your mama, call Uncle Ray Ray. How do I put this? It's 2012, damn it. And Reese on the Radio is now in the thick of things. It's an election year. And it's only right that I do what's proper. I've officially moved to the D.C. area, folks. That's right. Reese on the Radio will be covering the elections live every day from right here in D.C. It's official. I've been dying to get the hell out of New York City. I have been dying to get out of New York City. So now, when all of the mayhem is happening, I will be right here. That's right, Barack Hussein Obama. I will be right here, footsteps from you. Footsteps from you. Helping everybody I possibly can to get you out of office. So that's right, Reese on the Radio, live from our nation's capital every weekday from 7 to 10. That's correct, 7 to 10 p.m. Welcome to the new era of Reese on the Radio. I will be here permanently. I'm going nowhere. Until, you know, of course, I got to go back to New York to deal with court. But that's just me. I got to deal with that. But this is my new home. And this is where I'll be making my mark. I always wanted to be in the heart of politics, and I will be here every day, Monday through Friday. Hey, yeah, on weekends too. And I'll be talking to the Charlie Rangels, the Nancy Pelosi's. I'll be talking to Jim Carney. I'll be talking to all them libs. I'll get Eric Cantor on the phone. John Boehner, Mitch McConnell, I'll have them all. That's right. This spring, this summer, and this fall, the elections that are going to take this president down. That's right, down, down, down. Reese on the Radio will be here. It's all over, folks. It's all over. And the beginning of a new era for Reese on the Radio begins today, February 20th, 2012. I'll find Big Tigger. I know he's out here somewhere. I'll find...
He ain't at PGC, though.
Well, whatever he is, but I'll find him, damn it. But we'll be out there. We'll be making some changes out here. We'll be going after the liberals. And, of course, I'll be arguing with our Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery, every day about all of the things that I will catch on audio. I'll be interviewing all of them. I'll be recording all of them. I will catch them out there. It is a new regime in radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. And it will all happen live right here from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. So say hello to my little friend. I couldn't think of another... movie quote.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I have no idea.
I don't know.
No,
how
no
that...
significance whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm not
None
sure how you
whatsoever.
Tied that in, but okay.
So if you'd like to talk to Reese on the Radio and find out what it is that I'm going to be doing, trust me, we'll let you know. But if you'd like to send an email to congratulate us, please do that. Congratulate me. Say that's right. Reese is going to be in the thick of things, and trust me, we're going to be doing things that we've never done before. You're going to hear from people you haven't heard from before on Reese on the Radio. Oh, and trust me, they will hate my ass. That's right. The Secret Service will be outside my door on a regular basis. They will be investigating me. I will be audited. All of it's going to happen. But Reese on the Radio has changed its address. And its address is now D.C. Mr. Montgomery, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that even though you're there and putting your ear to the ground and your nose to the grindstone, trust me, ladies and gentlemen, I will also be around keeping them honest.
Keeping me honest? You think you're going to be keeping me honest?
I've always done so, and I will continue to do so.
Wait, hold on. I've got to ask. I just got a text message from, I hope this is from Jaquan, what are we congratulating you for? You missed. Why? Because Reese on the Radio is now in D.C. Reese on the Radio is out of New York. That cesspool, Babylon. That's what it is. Babylon, damn it. And I have moved to the Constitution. I am close to it. I am here declaring the independence of Reese on the Radio. I am here to do what it is that many people in the radio business have not been able to do, and that is to get to the bottom of our system. That's right. We are going to be doing things that have never been done on radio. And we're going to challenge the people who need to be challenged, and that tells you they're going to hate me. They're going to hate me. They're going to audit me. They're going to search me at the door. There'll be Secret Service outside my apartment. They will be finding out what it is that I'm doing. They'll find out whether or not I've got any weird fetishes. They'll find out whether or not they're going to find out whether or not I haven't paid my taxes. They're going to find out whether or not I got a weird propensity for midgets. They're going to find out. I am creating.
Hey, tough guy, Newsflash.
Go for it. What's the newsflash? Newsflash.
Just as much as you're there to stick your mug up in Obama's face, remember his face is now up in yours.
Well, that's all.
You're in his town. You're marching in his backyard.
This is not his backyard. Chicago's his backyard.
No. As long as he resides on Pennsylvania Avenue, Mary.
JC.
Mary,
I've been here longer than the Obamas have. Don't even try it.
And they still went down there and took over your yard.
Go ahead, Jamie.
So while you're there with the complex that what's the complex I'm looking for? The mini pincher chihuahua complex. You still got one bull mastiff in the White House that at the drop of a fingers.
You are referring to me as a chihuahua to the bull mastiff of Barack Obama. Is that what you're trying to say?
Of course. Are you comparing yourself to the President of the United States of America, whether you're a fan of his party or not?
Listen to me. In the famous words.
Of somebody else.
A change is going to come. That's right. And I hope
you
change.
Kim Burrell remixes it.
Trust me. It is a big deal that I'm down here. Trust me, it's going to be a big deal.
Oh, I know you're going to make noise.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not going to be banging pots and pans either.
I mean, as much as that's something I would say, I would never ever say on him. I'm still not going to say it, but we're a student of the worst kind.
Whoa.
Students of the worst kind.
Students of the worst kind.
Yeah. I'll explain that later. However, I will say this. You do it better, you do it with class, and you're much more effective with it.
All right, even now I have to agree with that. But please explain the earlier comment.
Well?
You know, this, my arguments are for another time. Never mind. Let's move on. Congratulations, Reese.
What are you talking
on the
about,
hub.
Montgomery?
Hmm?
Are you lost?
No. He's asking whether or not you're lost.
No, I'm not lost. I'm just, there's too many comments I want to make, and we don't have the time. So let's just...
We've got plenty of time. Give me another 15 minutes. What do you got?
No. He can have the floor. I'll step back. We'll, I'm going to watch him dance.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about why you're really there.
Well, what do you mean, why am I really there? Please tell me.
Let's see. Well... Okay, why are you really there? I mean, really. Is it because you just left New York, or did you have nowhere else to go?
Oh, what the heck does that mean? There are plenty of places I could have gone. I could have gone back to Boston. I chose not to go back to Boston.
All right, well, like I said, I don't know the particulars, so I'm not going to top this out on air until I know what I'm talking about. And
oh.
Until I do.
Wow, James. That's all I can say is wow.
No, no, I don't know. Let's see whether or not he has a point, or is he just rambling on like some weirdo?
Okay. Now, all right, fine. You were in New York. You had your apartment. You were working in New York. You lost your job, correct?
Nah, I quit.
Oh, you quit. Okay.
I quit.
Quit, lost, all right, cool. So, frankly, you couldn't afford to stay there anymore, correct?
No, that's not why. I could afford to stay there. I had a place to stay. I was already taken care of. It wasn't a financial move.
All right, it just seems to me that it was convenient that you are with one of our intrepid crew. And now that you've found your way or landed in a spot that does prove beneficial to you, seems to me that you're saying that you made all these moves simply because you wanted to, and that it was all your choice to do so, when, from what I know, and I may be wrong.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going off the deep end.
The way you landed.
Oh, well, James, just to give you a heads up. One, the opportunity to move to D.C. actually approached me many weeks ago. If I get what your inference is, I don't think it had anything to do with what it is that you're claiming it to be with. This was an opportunity to do something which I called, in my view, a radical change of atmosphere, and an opportunity to do something wildly different. And to not be sort of succumbed to the situation I was dealing with, the court case and all that other stuff. This was an opportunity for me to do something, as far as I was concerned, radically different. Radically different. And I think, although I understand where you're getting your idea from. Say again?
Point of view?
Yeah, well, your point of view. Yes, your POV. Your POV, I think, I hate to use the term without merit when it comes to you, because you, some odd reason, I feel like you would take offense to that. But it lacks merit. Because you are uninformed, or in your case, kind of misinformed. This is
You know what? And as I said, that's why I didn't want to bring this up until I was more informed.
Oh, no. I want you to bring it up. I want you to bring it up. I want many people to bring it up. This is the type of thing. Look, as many people know, that I deal with the issues as they are, and I deal with the tough questions. I'm afraid of nothing. I fear nothing. And if you, even knowing me personally, as you've known me, what? How many years has it been, James?
35. That's a generous assumption. That's a generous estimate.
Well, no, actually, I don't think 35, because 35 would make when we knew each other.
It's over 30.
So we knew each other when we were in the summer of us going into the sixth grade.
Well, I say 16. You say it was earlier than that.
No, I know it was earlier than that, James. We met when it was the summer of both of us going into the sixth grade at IS 238.
Mm-hmm.
On Hillside Avenue.
That would make you about 12.
No, that would make me about 12 years old.
So that would be 30. So
from 12
that would
be 30. To now, we're both 40. Well, you're 42. I'm 43.
30 years,
that's
James.
Still over 30, correct?
30 years, just over 30 years.
35, isn't that what I just said?
No, 30 years, not 35, just over 30 years.
Semantics, as you keep saying. Whatever.
35,
all right.
30.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 5 years, semantics.
I was in the ballpark.
Yes, you were, James. I will concede that you were in the ballpark. You know,
okay.
Wrigley Field compared to Candlestick Park, but you were in the ballpark.
Nah, man, I think we're talking about the big green wall.
Yeah, right. No kidding. It's the green monster.
Green. All right, whatever.
Jeez.
Still, I'm right.
Clearly doesn't watch baseball. But that's the deal, and that's where we are today. Reese on the Radio has moved to D.C., and that's where we are, and that's where Reese on the Radio will be. This election will be different. The coverage of this election will be probably – it will be a departure from what it is that you will see on conventional news shows and on conventional current event shows. So you can expect me to be right on the grind. I will be screaming at writers of the Washington Post. I will be contacting writers of the Washington Post. One of the newspapers, which is the top five list of all syndicated newspapers in the United States. So you can expect some changes to happen. And definitely as a blogger and as a member of the Blog Talk Radio staff, you can expect some amazing things to happen and to take place. So that's where we are. That's what we'll be doing. It's Reese on the Radio live from D.C. That's where we are. That's where we're going to be. Forever and ever, we will be here. Forever. Forever and ever. It's Reese on the Radio.
I wish Black History Month was over already. And I don't mean over at the end of the month. I wish Black History Month was over for all time. I know. I just spoke heresy in the eyes of liberals and Afrocentric. I don't care. And I can hear them now, accusing me of making a statement I made so I can get approval and acknowledgement from white folks. Really? Aren't you the ones who demand to have a month set aside so white folks can acknowledge you? You're the ones desperate for recognition from white folks. You want these white Democrats to give you reparations and affirmative action and whatnot. I don't need any of these things you demand from white folks. I don't need a feel-good month set aside for me. I'm happy about being black all year long. I celebrate being an American all year long. I don't need a month set aside for me to boost my self-esteem. As the saying goes, Jesus already thinks I'm to die for. Why would I celebrate Black History Month when it would be racist to have a White History Month? I mean, to be fair, American history is pretty much taught to us as white history. So we really don't need a White History Month. But the reason why we don't know that much about black history is because the school system is dominated by the Democrat Party, who has a history of segregating black people. So it only makes sense that they would segregate a month for black people. And in this special month, Democrats oversee what you know about black history. And one thing they don't want you to know about is the true relationship of blacks and Republicans and blacks as Republicans. Along with Black History Month, I do not like having channels like BET, when it would be seen as racist to have WET. But again, to be fair, television has always been white entertainment television. Hollywood is totally racist, and they're dependent on keeping people in a certain box so as to maintain their entertainment formula. White liberal mecca Comedy Central calls themselves throwing black folks a bone with their new comedy show called Key and Peele. Now, I get called a sellout while Key and Peele happily take money to promote the so-called black stereotype on Comedy Central. Look, y'all, I totally understand that we have some cultural differences, and it's a beautiful thing about our country worth celebrating. But giving a culture special treatment leads to resentment, not celebration. Y'all, there are many black heroes to celebrate in American history. I'm not saying you shouldn't acknowledge and learn about them. I'm saying that the black community has settled for a month as if it were a tribal reservation on a calendar. Or even worse, it's a February plantation where the Democrats milk their stock for voter loyalty.
I'm Alfonso Rachel for Zone Nation, where we conservative blacks don't celebrate black history once a year. We make American history every day.
Please stand by. Reese on the Radio will return in a few moments. We're just handling some business in the background. But don't worry, Reese on the Radio will return in a moment.
BlogTalkRadio.com. The number is 347-308-8701. And, of course, it's BlogTalkRadio.com/Reese on the Radio. And we're going to do the top of the hour in about 40 seconds. And, of course, if you know, the announcement is that Reese on Radio has moved its locations. We are its location. We are live from D.C. We are in the D.C. area now. We are in the thick of politics and pop culture. And we'll be dealing with things that you have not seen in radio ever. And I got some feedback from somebody here in the area who said to me that people aren't used to my style. And that's what I love about being here. I am so happy they're not used to it. That's the reason why I'm going to change the entire dynamics of the way that people do things right here in the D.C. area. So, expect the best and see the worst of most people. Trust me, you will. It's Reese on the Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's the third hour of Reese on the Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. The number is 347-308-8701. An article that I saw this weekend caught me out there. So, of course, you know that it's time for a segment that I like to call the Sunday Papers. And when I read some of these stories, I don't even know what to say. They put them out there because, you know, you're sitting at home and, you know, you've got nothing to do and you pick up these newspapers and you pick up these papers and you read them and for some odd reason, you believe the hype.
Sunday Papers. Read all about it. Sunday Papers. Read all about it. Sunday Papers.
So the title of the article is, for women under 30, most births occur outside marriage. And I didn't know how to respond to this when I first saw it. Because what I found most alarming when I read it was, they were targeting white women. Now, it's an important thing to recognize when somebody writes an article and they sort of assert something about white women. Let me just read some of the portions of the article in and of itself. It used to be called illegitimacy. Now it's the new normal. After steadily rising for 5 decades, the share of children born to unmarried women has crossed a threshold. More than half of births to American women under 30 occur outside of marriage. Once largely limited to poor women and minorities, motherhood without marriage has settled deeply into middle America. The fastest growth in the last 2 decades has occurred among white women in their 20s who have some college education but no 4-year degree, according to Child Trends, a Washington research group that analyzed government data. Among mothers of all ages, a majority, 59% in 2009, are married when they have children. But the surge of births outside marriage among younger women, nearly two-thirds of children in the United States are born to mothers under 30, is both a symbol of the transforming family, and a hint of a coming generational change. Now, I gotta stop there, folks. Because what the New York Times is writing is telling you, hey, get with the program. Things are changing. Now people are getting married pardon me, now people are having children outside of marriage. It's a cultural change. They're going just based on data. Hey, the data just says that, look, people aren't, they're not so hell-bent about getting married before they have children. This has become normal. And they start the article off by using that term. It used to be called illegitimacy. It used to be called? Let me let you in on something there, floozy. Your bastard child is still illegitimate. That's right. Your child is still a bastard. It's not used to be called illegitimate. Your kid is still illegitimate. It used to be called. That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say it to the thugs out there. Hey, yo, my man. Baby girl is a bastard. Hey, yo, my man. Little man is a bastard. Oh, I don't care if you're on a birth certificate. That means nothing. Did you marry that skeezer that you got pregnant? That worthless receptacle? Did you marry her? That's right. Because that's what you call her. I see you when you're stomping around and you find out you are the father. What, Mary, you got a problem with what I just said?
A big problem.
What did I call her? What are you mad about? I said that she was a worthless receptacle?
Reese, you can't, I mean.
I can call her anything that I want. She's not a real human being.
Yes, she is.
Who is she?
Whoever you are referring
what,
to.
Name her.
Any unwed mothers.
Name
out there.
This worthless receptacle.
Any unwed mothers.
Oh, so she just got pregnant for some guy and she didn't get married?
Some women don't want to get married.
So why didn't she put a bare aspirin between her knees?
Because some women want to have babies but don't want to deal with the man.
Oh, so they're no longer called illegitimate? Now it's the new normal?
Well, it's still called illegitimate because that's what illegitimacy means.
So she wanted to have a bastard.
No, Reese, it's still called illegitimacy. But it's just more widely accepted today than it ever
widely
was.
Widely accepted
before.
By whom?
By liberals. No,
by
I'm
whom?
Kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm kidding.
Now, look, I know right now I've already delved into horrible territory with you. I know.
Oh,
our instructed crew.
Oh, my God.
Come on. Somebody give me some help. James, are you offended that I called the woman?
Oh, got my hand up. Put me in, coach.
You're in.
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, so it's only liberals?
No, forget about liberals.
Kidding.
That's what she was kidding. But am I wrong by calling her a worthless receptacle?
Actually, at that point, no, you're not. A worthless receptacle, I can only talk about, you know, my point of view. Being male, had that extra chromosome going. However.
Do you want us to clap for you?
Oh, clap? No, you know what? The thing is, you've already clapped for us.
Ooh.
Oh, good one, James. Good one.
Wow, that was pretty vicious, dude.
Good one. I don't know.
Well, you know what? We've come to a point nowadays where you have to be brutal. Because speaking only for myself.
Go ahead, speak for yourself.
Thank you. Thank you for that. But speaking only for myself. And not saying that there are the unmitigated few who just think, I'm going to run through everybody else and don't care, but it happens on every side. However, it is more.
But no, the New York Times is saying that it happens to more white women because they know that white people are the majority in this country. So by setting a narrative, by saying that there are more white people in the country and saying that more white people are having children illegitimately, by saying that we no longer have to use the term, this is why they start the story off with, it used to be called illegitimacy. Illegitimacy, now it's the new normal. That's a proclamation, James.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And
it
why
is the new normal?
Because
it's not the new normal.
But it becomes the new normal.
But it's not.
Wait,
they don't get to say that it's the new normal.
Reed.
They don't get to
but
do
they're
that.
But they're basing that statement off of the fact that it has steadily risen, that this is happening. So what used to not be so normal in numbers is now normal in numbers. That's what they're saying.
I don't agree with that. It's not.
I agree with that.
I'm not saying that it should be the new normal. I'm not saying that people should be accepting of this. I'm not saying that. I'm not even giving my personal opinion. I won't, because you want to use things like receptacle. So I won't even waste my breath when you call women a receptacle and a skeezer. But according to numbers, the numbers are getting increasingly higher in the past 5 decades, according to this report.
Whoa.
Let me finish. The numbers are getting increasingly higher, and according to those numbers, it has the feel or the trend that this is becoming more increasingly normal than any other time.
Mary, you are giving this article too much credit. That's the reason why I brought it up. I want to bring up another passage in this book. In this article, one group still largely resists the trends: college graduates who overwhelmingly marry before having children. That is turning family structures into a new class divide, with the economic and social rewards of marriage increasingly reserved for people with the most education. So now they're making it a class war. Watch
but
this.
Saying that
they're making it a class war for a reason.
Okay,
wait, I'm
going to
tell you how they do, James. Wait, let me finish the next paragraph. Marriage has become a luxury good, said Frank Furstenberg, a sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania. The shift is affecting children's lives. Researchers have consistently found that children born outside of marriage face elevated risk of falling into poverty, failing in school, or suffering emotional or behavioral problems. Now, if we know that and the research is saying that, why are more people doing this? And why would they begin their article by saying, and I quote, it used to be called illegitimacy, but now it's the new normal?
It's the new normal because things change. No matter who you are, no matter what class you are, no matter what ism you claim to be, things change. Also, when things change, the classification that came before changes also.
I can't believe I'm saying it, but I have to admit that I agree with you. Oh, my God.
You're killing me.
Oh, my God? Okay.
Well, she doesn't normally agree with you, James. You know that.
All right. Okay. But
are you telling me that it's
right now? Let's just deal with what is right now.
Okay.
Okay. Because this isn't the 50s. This isn't even the 80s where there was a boom. Actually, there's a classification now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, baby boomers and things of that nature.
James, the baby boomer generation were of people who got married. Do you understand that? The baby boomer generation with the flower power movement of the 1960s.
Yeah, flower power. But they
all got married, James.
And what's
they
saying?
All,
before,
James,
they all got divorced too.
Before the flower power movement, everyone said you have to be married. You have to have the what did they call it before the nuclear family?
No, no, the nuclear family happened in the 80s. The nuclear family began in the 80s. Listen to what it is that I'm saying. The reason why they were called the baby boomers was because that generation had more children than any others. Then that was called the baby boomer generation. Even though they were about peace, love, and war, an anti-war. Even though they were about peace, love, and no, yes, they were. James, it was the anti-Vietnam establishment. That's who they were. But what they didn't do, the one thing that they never ever protested was marriage and love. And remember, the baby boomers, most of those people got married, whether that was a flower ceremony or one of those hippie ceremonies, but they got married. The institution of marriage was still strong. The reason why they called the baby boomer generation wasn't because they had more children out of wedlock. It's because more of them got married because they believed in love. The more ways that we show love is through marriage. And that's what they believed. The baby boomers, who are now executives and retirees today, most of those people believed in marriage and love. They believed that as opposed to war. The next generation, those are the ones who believed that marriage was a fallacy, that was bullcrap, that what they were doing was marriage was an institution. It was an anti-establishment. That was in the 70s. The anti-establishment rhetoric of the Catholic Church. That's when people were just trying to have these flower ceremonies where piece of paper. The bottom line is, let me read a little more, and I'll let you respond to this, but let me read a little more. Here in Lorain, Ohio, a blue-collar town west of Cleveland, where the decline of married two-parent family has been especially steep, dozens of interviews with young parents suggest that both sides have a point. Over the past generation, Lorain, Ohio, lost most of the two steel mills, a shipyard and a Ford factory, diminishing the supply of jobs and let blue-collar workers raise middle-class families. More women went to work, making marriage less of a financial necessity for them. Living together became routine. Single motherhood lost the stigma that once sent couples rushing to the altar. Women here often describe marriage as a sign of having arrived, rather than a way to get there. Meanwhile, children happen. Now listen to what it is that they're saying there. They're saying that now because women have birth, they don't care. Go ahead. Tell me what did you think from that paragraph.
From that paragraph, what I'm getting is this. All right? Again, there were the overall impetus or the overall belief that you had to be married in order to live the American dream.
I don't agree with that. Where'd you get that from?
It's the fact that, okay, back in the days, women, it was socially...
It's a social ideal.
It was socially normal for women to get married. That's what you did. You grew up, you went to school, you graduated high school, your mother taught you how to cook, she taught you how to clean, she taught you how to take care of a man, and you found a husband that would take care of you, and you would bear children with them, and be happy with this man for the rest of your life, and he would financially keep you and your children stable. And what they're saying is that because of the failure of jobs and things to that nature, that now women are having to go out.
Failure.
Women have to, the failure of jobs because of these steel. They're only talking about Lorain, Ohio. Okay, that's what they're referring to. The failure of these steel mills, and Ford, and has made women go out and start working. When in this country there are more women working
have to go out and start working
than there ever was, and you know that. We all know that. And it's not just because we have to, it's because we want to, because the world has changed. And I understand your point.
Why did it change?
Okay, if I may.
Why did it change? That dynamic change?
James, if you give me an opportunity, let me read what it is that, again, in the New York Times they read this, and I want to hear what it is that you think. Based upon your question, I want to hear what you think about this particular passage in the article, because your question is very valid, and I think this paragraph breaks that down. They talked to a woman by the name of Amber Strader, who's 27 years old. They say she was in an on-and-off relationship with a clerk at Sears a few years ago when she found herself pregnant. A former nursing student.
She found herself.
When she found herself pregnant, a former nursing student who now tends bar, Ms. Strader said her boyfriend was so dependent that she had to buy his cigarettes. Marrying him never entered her mind. It was like, quote, sorry, she says, it was like living with another kid, she said. When a second child with a new boyfriend followed 3 years later, her birth control failed, she said. Her boyfriend, a part-time house painter, was reluctant to wed. Ms. Strader likes the idea of marriage. She keeps her parents' wedding photo on her kitchen wall and says her boyfriend is a good father. But for now, marriage is beyond her reach. I'd like to do it, she says. I just don't see it happening right now, she said. Most of my friends say it's just a piece of paper and it doesn't work out anyway. Do you understand that there is a narrative against marriage?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But do you understand the narrative that you just said?
Oh, no. I'm just quoting the article.
All right. Quoting the article, let's put it where it is. All right? It wasn't the fact that here was a dude, he was a guy, whoever this man was,
yeah,
who actually stepped up. He said it was. That's what he wanted. And because of the social norms, he was willing to accept that. It was before that.
Okay.
It was before that that everybody is fixated on. So it doesn't mean whether the fact that she had other children or whether she had children with this man, but she had children with the other dude. She had children with this man. He's still wanting to. Okay, no matter how it started, this is our family. Let's deal with this right now. But everyone, society, and everything else is saying, well, you know what? You can't just move on. You still have to deal with what went on before.
Okay, I'm giving you an opportunity to speak, James, because can I break something down to you real quick?
Sure.
And I want to hear, based upon what it is that you just said, listen mm-hmm. to this in the article. Large racial differences remain. 73% of black children are born outside of marriage, compared to 53% of Latinos and 29% of whites. And educational differences are growing. About 92% of college-educated women are married when they gave birth, compared to 62% of women with some post-secondary schooling, and 43% of women with a high school diploma or less, according to Child Trend. Of almost all of the rise in non-marital births has occurred among couples living together. Now, that's actually pretty good. While in some countries, such relationships endure at rates that resemble marriages, in the United States, they are more than twice as likely to dissolve their marriages. In a summary of research by some people, both of the University of Michigan reported that two-thirds of couples living together split up by the time their child turned 10 years old. Now, you don't think that there's a narrative here?
I never said that.
And
what
look
I'm
at
saying this, is, no matter seven, if there's a narrative seven, there.
73% okay. of black children are born. 73% of black children are born to unwed mothers.
73 of black. All right. What was the other?
Three for Latinos, 29 for whites.
Okay. So it happens on
all of the spectrum, correct?
Yes, it's based on that spectrum. So what do you take from that?
What I take is this. Again, you have a bunch of children thinking they can do better than their parents.
Not doing better than your parents. Listen, generations before us, we take the greatest generation, the post-World War II generation, their kids did better than them. The post-Depression era, those kids did better. Look at the 80s. The 80s parents did better.
And in that era, there was still a...
James, the only generation, where children have done worse than their parents before, and that is because of promiscuity and a permissibility of this type of behavior, and that is children out of wedlock. You like it or not, that most children do better in married households than they do in single parent household, bar none. And for them to say that this is normalcy, bar none, James. Most families do better when the parents are married than single parents anywhere. The statistic remains.
I don't think so. I don't think so, because look at what's going on, especially nowadays. All right? Especially because now it's a selling point.
James, put up.
Now it's a selling point. Well, I came from this, and I still, because I came from this, I went on to this.
So what you're saying is now for children that come that are born out of wedlock or to single parent homes, they're looking at this like, oh, the children are looking at this, or the parents are teaching the children to look at this like, now this is a challenge. Here's the ball, run with it. Show me what you can do, even though there were not two parents in the home, or even though I had to raise you by myself. Show me and show the rest of the world what you can do. This is a challenge for those kids
that
are born out of wedlock.
James,
the challenge is there.
James is describing.
I can only agree on one point.
James is describing.
But the challenge is there
at the moment.
Because
you're ascribing adversity as a motivator.
Hasn't it been?
James,
a starting point?
James, for some people, it is a motivator. For some
nowadays, everybody's saying so.
No, James, I agree with you that for some people, and those are the elite, that it is a challenge. They will take their situation. Some people are able to look at a situation that they come from and move beyond that and want to do more for themselves. But there are also many more people that become victims of their situation and do not ascribe to do better for themselves. Instead, they just become victims. And I guarantee you, if we looked up those numbers that are for people that have not done better for themselves because of the circumstances they were in is greater than those that have taken on the challenge and have been capable of looking at the situation in a positive aspect and saying, you know what, my mother or my father raised me this way by themselves. They struggled, they this, they that, and I am going to make something better out of my life. Those numbers are going to be less higher than the numbers that...
And I don't agree with that. I do not agree with that.
So let's look it up then. JC, can you look those numbers up?
Exactly what am I looking up?
Yeah, you're look up the numbers of, I guess, successful people that are born illegitimately.
How are you going to ask him to do that?
Why not?
What is the measuring bar of success?
Well, what is your measuring bar of success?
My measuring bar.
We all obviously have a
difference. Even though I'm not JC or or someone else who's not an entertainer, just the fact that I've gotten my house together, my house in order, and even though I'm paying rent, and I may pay rent my whole entire life, my family can still come and see me. My family does. It's not so quantifiable.
Well,
that
here's.
Okay, James. I see your point in a way, but this is okay. So I see what your measuring bar is. Okay. So you're basically surviving. You didn't fall totally victim to maybe some circumstances that you were under. But I'm talking about my measuring bar is equivalent to people that, and this is not by, you know, to people that have actually gone out and made a huge, you know, have become
that have
gone on to get master's degrees and PhDs and that have made themselves into something that maybe they never thought that they could ever become, or because of the circumstances, because of where they grew up, because of the financial situation that their parents may have been in or their parent was in. So that's what I'm talking about. That is my measure. That's my measuring bar. I'm talking about something above and beyond. Yes, we all come from, I know that I come from a single parent home, and I know that I'm grateful for everything that my mother did for me and that I did come a long way from where I was, but in no means am I finished.
Yeah, but
I will not settle for where I am now.
Do you believe that your chances would have been better if you had been under the circumstances of having what would be a traditional family?
Most definitely.
See, James, you're talking about adversity motivating somebody to do better. But what I see in the African-American community, and especially based on the numbers that they cite in this New York Times article, 73% of African-Americans being born...
Hold on, before you start doing all that, you know what? Again, you're only dealing with a certain group of numbers. You can spout all the numbers you want, but that's a certain group.
But that's right. A majority, James.
That's a huge majority.
Majority isn't just sitting on their asses doing nothing.
I didn't suggest that, James.
But nor is the majority going out there and really being the best that they can do. The majority are probably saying,
right,
and this is my opinion, the majority are probably saying, you know what? I've done damn good. I was raised on welfare. I come from a single parent home. My mother or father had to bust their humps to get us where we are. And I have a job. I can pay my rent. I pay my electricity. I pay my gas. I have a car. I can get back and forth to work. I maybe even went to college and got my associate's degree. That is the majority. It's almost like settling for a little bit less just because of your circumstances.
Yeah, and James, I think a very, very strong point about what's being made in this article and why I'm opposed to what they're trying to create as a social norm is, and hear me out when I say this, is that some people have sort of gotten into this ideal that because people dealt with that adversity, that for some odd reason is a better way of life, if you get my meaning. In other words, they're saying because they had to deal with those circumstances of living in a single parent household, that their life mission is somewhat more significant than those who had a traditional home with a mother and a father who both worked and took care of their children, as if, you know, somebody who didn't have to deal with that, that their lives are more significant because of adversity. It's almost like we're using...
But that's what we're always told.
No. Why
even you tout that?
What? No,
even you tout that.
I don't tout that. I tout that more people need to be in traditional households so that all children can survive and all...
The thing is, again, the traditional is subjective. You know, nowadays, you're always talking about people who come up out of all of that. You don't talk about the janitor who's worked 30 years of his life in that same job and, you know, paid for his child's education or for the child's, you know, for the child's advancement.
James, does he live in a traditional? Does he live in a traditional household? Is he living in a household with a man and a wife? Are they living in that traditional household?
Nowadays, everybody is saying, "Oh, well." I mean, come on. How many times have we heard the story? Well, you know what? My father wasn't there. My mom wasn't. You know, she may have been there, but she wasn't for me.
But so what, James?
So I took that
celebrating.
As,
No. What we're celebrating and what I'm telling you has become a social norm is that it's become a social norm to celebrate single-parent households and to put that on a pedestal. Remember, every time you hear about an athlete or a businessman who tells
right.
that story about how he lives in a single-parent household and how he persevered, what
right.
we're doing is we're saying, you in your single-parent situation, you can make it too. In other words, we're celebrating that behavior. We're celebrating that environment. What we need to do is stop celebrating that environment, and we need to say, listen, he may have been able to make it under those circumstances, but it's better to live in a household where there are two loving parents who are supporting their children. That's what
we need. Why is it better when you can do so anyway?
No, but James, the majority don't go on to become those type of people.
That's the point.
The minority.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And the thing is, the bar has been set. And
James,
even though I may just be a chatterer, it doesn't mean that I am any less.
No, James, you're making
somebody who has a PhD and somebody who has or any other asterisk or
but James, you can't argue the fact that being a janitor and going on to college and going on to grad school and getting your PhD
yeah.
is not better.
You can't argue that.
I can't argue that.
But you can't argue that just because you have a PhD and you've gone on to college and things of that nature, you can't argue the fact that I can do just as much.
James, no one is disputing that. It doesn't matter what background.
Let me explain to you what I'm saying.
I'm not disputing the fact that, yes, no matter what background you come from, no matter what job it is that your father or your mother does in a single-parent household, that you can't make it. James, that's what makes America great. No matter what your circumstances, you still have the opportunity to be whomever it is that you want. But that being said, what people are doing and what they're doing in this article is that they're touting single-parent households as if to make it the new norm, as if to say that if we make it the new norm, then people can feel comfortable with having unwed children. And that is the wrong message to send. You cannot tell the American public that this is the new normal. It's not the new normal. Traditional values always exceed in this country.
And
you
again,
need to
say, what are traditional values?
I just told you. A marriage, unwed marriage is not traditional. Unwed marriage is not traditional.
No, it's not. And yet, every person that you can speak of nowadays are saying that, well, either they either came from a wedded marriage or a wedded union, and that's why, or they came from an unwedded one in spite of.
Yeah.
James, okay, but this is, okay, those people that come from an unwed marriage and you can say in spite of, those are great stories. They really are. They're heartfelt, they're warm, they're touching. Those are fabulous stories. But I promise you that I personally And I'm not putting those people down. I promise you that I can say that for all of the people that I know or that I have come in contact with throughout my 37 years of living on this earth and in the United States of America, I can promise you that the majority of people that come from a home that have wed parents that are together and raise their children as a family are better off in life, in every aspect of life, whether it is financial, whether it is emotionally stable, whether it is mentally stable.
Everyone?
The majority of those people are better off than the majority of people that come from single family homes. And I will tell you, coming from a single family home without a father in my life, I was affected as a female, as a woman, as a girl, as a little child. I was affected by that greatly, and I am still affected by that at the age of 37 years old. So do I agree that you should have a mother and a father in your life raising you together, that would have been better? Do I think that my life would have taken a different turn? I do believe that, although I am very proud of where I am from, based on the circumstances that I was dealt coming into this world. And will I succumb to those circumstances? Never, ever. Do I want more for myself? Most definitely. Will I continue to want more for myself? Every waking moment I have on this earth, I will aspire to be a better person. And I will aspire to have more than anyone in my family probably ever has. And I am the only person in my family that ever went to college. Am I proud of that? Most definitely I'm proud of that. And I am glad for where I came from to what I am today, because it has made Mary who she is. But the fact is, if I would have had my mother and my father in the home raising myself and my sister, we probably would have been a lot better off than we are today.
Let me read a little more of this, Jamie. Okay, they say, today neither of Mrs. Strader's pregnancies left her thinking she should marry to avoid stigma. Like other women interviewed here, she described her children as largely unplanned, a byproduct of uncommitted relationships. Some unwed mothers cite the failures of their parents' marriages as a result to wait. As a reason to wait, I apologize. Brittany Kidd was 13 when her father ran off with one of her mother's friends, plunging her mother into depression and leaving the family financially unstable. Quote, "Our family life was pretty perfect. A nice house, two cars, a dog, and a cat," she said. "That stability just got knocked out like a window. It shattered." Miss Kidd, 21, said she could not imagine marrying her son's father, even though she loves him. "I don't want to wind up like my mom." You hear what's considered the normalcy here? Others noticed that if they married, their official household income would rise, which could cost them government benefits like food stamps and child care. W. Bradford Wilcox, a sociologist at the University of Virginia, said other government policies like no-fault divorce signal that marriage is not a fundamental to society as it once was. Do you understand that there is a narrative here?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do, but do you understand that that narrative also proves to be the exception to the rule? All right, just because you have that doesn't mean you're going to have the big house, the white picket fence with the 2.5 kids and the dog.
What if you do it right, James? You will.
If you do it right, it doesn't matter whether you started off as the norm, okay, It doesn't say that you are.
James, you wouldn't have liked to have married your children's mother and have had a traditional family. Is that not something that you would have? And I'm not asking you this. Don't base your answer on the fact whether you wanted to marry this woman or not. But wouldn't you have liked to have been able to say to your kid, you know, to yourself and to your kids that, you know, I'm with your mother. Your mother and I are here to do what we can do, the best we know how to do, whether you're working as a janitor or a CEO of any company. The financial part is not the situation here. The situation is that you are working together as a unit. You have come together as a unit. You have thought more about this situation and about having children.
You're being practical.
Than many other people. I mean, wouldn't you have been proud of that? Wouldn't you have, like, I'm not telling you to regret anything that you did, but wouldn't you have liked to have been able to say that? Wouldn't you have liked to be able to sit down with your children when you're, you know, in your 60s and look back at movies together
and
with your wife
story,
and told them stories about you and their mother, or, you know, things like that? Isn't that what you don't? Wouldn't you have wanted to do that more than anything else? I know personally for me, I would have. That would have been more ideal for me, in my opinion, than anything else.
James, your answer, and then we'll go to a break. But answer a question, and then we'll go to a break.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes. I mean, unequivocally and unreservedly, yes. But it didn't happen.
All right.
Thank you for being honest.
I appreciate your honesty. We'll take a break. We'll wrap up the show. It's Reese on the Radio, 347-308-8701.
I tried a lot of cars, Ford Pinto, the Pontiac Fiero, but the Volt was the first car that truly got me excited and looking into the prospect of buying American again. Yeah, I've heard they're catching on fire in some cases, but I found that the fire really helps me get to my destination faster for fear of my life. Also, people really move out of the way when giant hunks of metal are hurtling towards them. Probably the one thing that sold me on the car. I'm really proud of what GM has been able to accomplish by working with the Obama administration. They've proven that in America, you can make it in any business, as long as you have unlimited financial resources and the backing of the United States government. I don't know about you, but I think that's more than worth the couple $100,000 it costs taxpayers every time somebody buys one of these suckers. I'm sorry, do you smell something?
Today does mark the beginning of the end.
The most sweeping economic recovery package in history. The package is the right size, it is the right scope, it has the right priorities to create 3 to 4 million jobs. The federal government is the only entity left with the resources to jolt our economy back into life. 3.5 million jobs over the next 2 years.
Look at me, the stimulus is working.
Only 8 out of every 10 stimulus dollars for wind power have gone to foreign companies.
Not even a good junk bond.
Unemployment is still very high.
It appears that 1.2 million people dropped out of the labor force in 1 month.
Well, I'm not going to say the recession is over until the unemployment rate is down to normal levels, certainly in the 5% range.
It knew the cars would be assembled in Finland.
The FBI raided bankrupt Solyndra.
Jobs in China.
$700,000 to create joke-telling software.
I didn't overpromise.
Shovel Ready was not as shovel ready as we expected.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a 0 on the old risker scale. Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th. New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward. Participation may vary.
It's Reese on the Radio. We are live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. And thank you for joining us today. It's President's Day, damn it. I'm sure you know it. An article I saw that I found was asking what was the most important presidential race in our history. And they were talking about But they, great article. It was in the Washington Post this Sunday. Now I gotta stop playing the damn music and I can't find it. There we go. Anyway, that's De La Soul, Copacabana. And we had a lengthy discussion about this article that was in the New York Times. And Mayor, you knew I saw this article and I told you it was going to be a hot button issue, right?
Yes.
I told you. I said this is it's one of those issues that people get into, but, you know, we'll continue to follow it. And, you know, this whole thing about white women being at risk. Oh, the white women are at risk of being single mothers.
Do you think that's because more white women are interracially dating?
Yes, damn it.
I'm sorry.
Of course that's why.
And that's really big here in the DMV, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
is
it's
it?
Huge.
Is it?
Never saw as much in New York as I see here.
So you're saying that the D.C. area, you're saying that there's more interracial relationships here than any other place you think in the country?
No. Now, if you've ever been to Alabama.
No, I ain't been to Bama.
Well, unlikely in the old Alabama, there's more white women dating the black man than there is
what
any
do you
other
think
place
that
I've
that's
ever
about?
Been.
And I would put James on the air right now, but I know what he's going to say, so I'm not going to do that right now. Because he's going to say something sexual and probably racially insensitive.
Like
probably,
we're not saying
probably
something
doing,
racially insensitive
yeah,
right
he's
now.
He's doing the horse act.
He has his hand up right now.
Right, he's doing the horse act right now. Ooh.
I know the answer, ooh. Teacher. I know the answer.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah, right. I knew it. I knew that's what you were doing. You were, oh. I knew it.
Let me in. Oh, I'll blow your house down.
So please, James, tell us, why do you think that there are more interracial relationships in the Bama area than there ever was before?
Why? In the Bama area? I don't know about the Bama area. Because, and this has to do with male and female, not white, black, nothing, all right? Women always love the bad boy.
So are you saying that all black people are bad boys?
Yeah, that was very stereotypical.
We're touted as the bad boys.
We're touted as the bad
boys. That's how we're perceived. So there's going to be more white women going to bad boys because, hey, you know, I can give my little social rebellion, and that's the way I can.
James, wow. Are you saying that there are white women out there slumming it?
I'm saying there's black women out there, too.
Whoa, I'm asking you about
I'm saying it. Women in general.
Are white women slumming it for the black man? You just said it. They're going out there being rebellious. You know that if they're being rebellious by going for the black man, they're out there slumming it for some of that bad boy. And you're saying that they're slumming it. Maybe that tick off their fathers.
Or tick off their single mothers.
Now that, yes. Actually, yeah, I'll say it. Yes, it's more a fact of pissing people off.
Wow, so you say
it is.
Well, you're saying that there is no genuine, not no, right? Let me rephrase that. You're saying that there's not a lot of genuine white-on-black love. You're saying a lot of that is to sort of the rebellion to get back.
Stick it to the man.
Stick it to, wow.
Stick it to the man, literally, yes.
Man, wow. That's a promo right there. Stick it to the man. Wow.
Or the woman.
Have the man.
Or the woman. Yeah,
well,
there you
I
go.
I don't see a lot of that. Or have the man stick it to you, whichever way you'd like to go.
Okay, we are totally keeping her away from the microphone. Let me just play. I'm sorry. We apologize for the comment.
Actually,
made.
I think.
Wait, James. James, for a second.
Shouldn't this be on Thursday or something?
James, hold on. We apologize for the comments made by Mary Mary while you're bugging. Please stand by as we readjust her microphone and possibly suspend her, like they do with ESPN.
Let me just feed into my name by saying, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Well, we know what you meant by that, James. But, James, now, you live in Virginia, so do you, and you're from New York, so do you think that there are more interracial relationships here than you ever saw in New York in your entire life?
I'm not sure how to answer that question. I want to say yes, but not in the way you think.
Well,
okay,
when you say when you say not the way you think, meaning when we say interracial, we don't just mean black to white. We're black to Asian, Latino to black, Latino to white, interracial, all aspects of it.
Well, as far as all aspects, then you know you're interested in who you're interested in.
Okay.
And that crosses all color lines.
Right, so you believe that there has been, you know, love as completely...
I think free. Love has taken a back seat.
Right. Really. tell us about this love you refer to.
Love is a feeling that you can't explain and you can't quantify.
And if loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Please,
you're
tell
my
us.
First, my last, my everything.
My 31st.
My 31st. What? This awful stab about me.
Actually, I was going somewhere with that, but your joke is better.
31st. You guys are never, ever going to let me live that down.
No, we won't. Especially when we know who you have put on the list.
Listen to me. DW, we're going to get you on the phone so we can finally clear this out. So I could just be down to 30. I'm full of...
I can't breathe.
All right, he's put on hold. I'm putting you on hold. You can't speak, James. You're done.
Well, of course he can't speak because he can't breathe.
Yeah, no kidding. We are so done. Anyway, as I told you, Reese on the Radio, we are now in D.C. We're happy to be here. We are very, very happy to be here. It's going to be a new day. J.C., he barely even joined the show today. J.C., you there?
J.C.?
I think he's sleeping. I think he's gone. We'll just hang up on him. Get him off the air. It's Reese on the Radio. We got to go. That's right. Reese on the Radio, we are back. We are back and we are live. It's in the D.C. area. Reese on the Radio from D.C.
In the DMV.
That's right, in the DMV. And we thank each and every one of you for listening to us and enjoying the show. We plan on having fun. This is going to be a great year, 2012. It's going to be a banner year for Reese on the Radio. And we'll see you here every day, 7 to 10. And we thank you for joining us. For Mary Mary, Why You Buggin', JC the producer, and the Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery, I'm Reese on the Radio, and we love you.